Hey, what the hell is going on? You ever watch The Office, The American Office? They went for like a bunch of seasons.
Talking about the show that everybody watched a million times?
Yeah, did you ever see that one? There are probably too many episodes for you to have gotten into it. Or
it's
did you?
Kind of like Seinfeld, where you don't need them to build on each other. It's just like on and it's background noise show. At any moment, and you laugh or you don't.
There's one episode in particular where Jim, who looks at the camera, like normally he does the smirk or whatever, where it's so chaotic. Everything is crazy. Everything's standing on its head that he turns and he goes, what is going on? And he can't get over it. Can't figure out what's happening. That's me pretty much over the weekend. I mean, my head is spinning. I'm swimming. I don't even, like, we're supposed to come on and express opinions. We're supposed to have great conversations to entice people to continue listening and participate. Like, I don't even know where to start. What the hell is going on?
Yeah, today is one of those days where I'm a stick to sports guy. I believe in the old sticking to sports. You come here for steak, we cook you some steak. We try not to throw burritos or hot dogs at you.
I would love some steak right now.
At the steakhouse. But you can't stick to sports me today. I stay in my little area. Mm-hmm. That's what I do. You came into my area, okay? This is my little spot. Mm-hmm. This is what I do. I push my glasses up on the bridge of my nose, and I clickety-clack on my laptop. And now you've decided, with all that space out there, to sit on my hands while I type. So there's not a lot I can do. So don't stick to sports me today. I'm going to be talking about the Commanders and their stadium and Terry McLaurin and the team's name. And there's just no way to... Occasionally, like, the two things just become the same thing. It melts into one.
Right.
You can't peel the politics and the sports out of this little... situation we got ourselves in here.
I mean, it's like an octopus. I mean, it's endless limbs, endless tangents, endless little branches on this tree. Unbelievable.
It's a wacky. So we'll start there. I mean, let's give our thoughts on this. So two comments yesterday from Donald Trump on the Commanders. The first on their name, and then secondly on their stadium. So I guess, Danny, if you don't mind, as Trump.
Sure.
Reading from he's not on Twitter anymore. I don't think he's on some other place that he tweets his takes off. So go ahead and read his comment, if you would, the initial one where he said that they need to change their name.
The Washington whatever should change immediately change that name back to the Washington Redskins football team. This is a big clamoring for this. Likewise, the Cleveland Indians, one of the six original baseball teams with a storied past. Our great Indian people in massive numbers want this to happen. Their heritage and prestige is systematically being taken away from them. Times are different now than they were 3 or 4 years ago. We are a country of passion and common sense. Owners, get it done.
So when I first saw that, and all the beat reporters doing their jobs correctly,
sure.
Posted what he said, and basically just threw something out there like, the president...
He weighs in on this thing.
Just weighed in on Washington's name. I was fine still because I said, you're not going to smoke me out with that one, guy. I don't have to deal with that very much. Because you can have a take on the name. He's not going to force them to change their name if Josh Harris doesn't want to change the name. There's not a whole lot more to this than Donald Trump wants the Commanders to be named the Redskins. And to that, I would say, me too. It ain't happening. Next, right? But then there was another one. See? And my whole, I don't have to really worry about this. I don't have to comment on this. I don't have to deal with this. This won't ruin my week. That all changed with the next comment from the President of the United States of America.
I may put a restriction on them if they don't change the name back to the original Washington Redskins and get rid of the ridiculous moniker Washington Commanders. I won't make a deal for them to build a stadium in Washington. The team would be much more valuable and the deal would be exciting for everyone. Cleveland should do the same with the Cleveland Indians, okay? Cleveland should. And the owner of the Cleveland baseball team, Matt Dolan, who is very political, has lost 3 elections in a row because of that ridiculous name change. What he doesn't understand is that if he changed the name back to the Cleveland Indians, he might actually win an election. Indians are being treated very unfairly. Make Indians great again. MIGA.
What did you say?
MIGA. MIGA.
Is that a thing?
It wasn't.
So I actually didn't know. A lot of people were tweeting me that. Now, I got to be honest. I stayed away from social media yesterday.
You did a little sprint.
You want to talk about a terrible place to be. I think sports takes get ugly.
Mm.
just go ahead and post what he said yesterday and say, as a fan of this team, I hate being caught in the middle of the political battle that's waging on, which is essentially what I said. I was called the enemy. I was told to eat a salad a couple hundred times. I mean, you know, well, I won't go there, but just know it was a cesspool yesterday on social media. Uh-huh. Okay, it was tough. So I missed out, but MEGA means Make Indians Great Again?
It would, to be very clear, because it's understandable, you're a big failure. You don't listen well. Make Indians Great Again is MEGA. We're looking for MEGA there, M-I-G-A, very much.
Cool. So this is where we are.
Yeah. Okay.
Danny Ruhier.
Here we go.
Grant Paulson.
Saddle up.
106.7 The Fan, Sports Talk Radio, your nice little departure away from the big scary world out there. This is where we are now. So what do you think about this? I mean, I saw Eric Flack, who's going to be on with us at 3 o'clock, who's covering the stadium, who's covering the, I guess there's nothing to cover as far as the name, but now, as of yesterday, it's a story, again, that will not go away. He tweeted, there are actually three ways that Trump could kill the RFK deal. Because I think a lot of people out there go, well, I mean, he's just saying this, but he can't actually do anything about it. No, in this case, there's actually plenty of ways that he could do something. Number one, an executive action could cancel the lease. Because the team, while they have been leased the land, I should say the city, I beg your pardon.
Right, the city has.
The city has been leased the land to build on in Washington, D.C. Think of this as renting a home.
Mm-hmm.
The landlord is still the federal government. So, for lack of a better phrase, the landlord is still Donald Trump, okay? He could sign off on an executive action where they cancel your lease and say, bring the car back that you're renting from us. That house is no longer yours. We're kicking you out. Even though the lease has been signed off on, and we'll get some clarification from this on from members of the city council as we go. But Eric Flack says, number one, he could just have an executive action, cancel the lease, and now there's no DC deal to be done. It's over because Trump said so. Number two is the National Capital Planning Commission, which casts critical votes on construction projects, including RFK Stadium. He has appointed all of the people within the last few months to the National Capital Planning Commission. And generally, the way that works, again, not a politics guy, just playing one on the radio today, just a boy who likes football.
Mm.
They're probably going to do what he wants, which is one of the committees then that could put the kibosh on a stadium deal. And then we've got number three, according to Eric Flack, which is the Commission of the Fine Arts. Again, Trump has appointed the people to the Commission of the Fine Arts. And you know what they do? They review designs of all DC construction.
Isn't that wild?
To sign off on anything being built, essentially, other than homes, I would imagine. Maybe homes are part of it. I don't really know. But certainly on any federal land, they have to say, yeah, we like what that looks like. So when Mitch Rales and Josh Harris and whatever other people are involved in the blueprint come to them and say, hey, this is what we want to build, they could say, nah, can't build that. So there are ways for him to be a fly in the ointment here, to say the least. So I ask you, Danny, how damaging was yesterday?
Nothing has happened yet. But the idea that a window is open or a door is open, and I think of this very selfishly from my point of view, because this is about my sports fandom, right? This isn't like a matter of policy. And again, I'm with you guys in the sense that I hate the bad thing and like the good thing. I agree with you. But when it comes to resolutions that directly affect me as a sports fan, I don't want complication. It's already complicated. The federal government, the city of government, the federal city, the locals, the team, the lobbying, the council. This is already as complicated as anything in the world could be, right? I mean, this literally plays out like an episode or a season of Entourage, a bubblegum fun show that I used to watch on HBO, where pretty much every season was, all right, we got a movie. End of the first episode. Bad news, no movie. Start the next episode. If we solve this problem, we got a movie. We solved the problem. Now there's no movie. And that was the show. And it was fun, right? Because everyone was attractive and it was in LA and you'd have a bunch of celebrity cameos. And it was bubblegum over in 30 minutes. But the writing was lazy. This is lazy writing. See what I'm saying? Like, this doesn't feel real. This feels like a bad script that doesn't make any sense. In other words, whether you like the content of what the president is saying or not, you should not want more complication to this. You see what I'm saying? You don't need more obstacles. If your goal is a good stadium for the football team, it got more complicated. That to me is immediate. I have a button, good or bad. Smack that bad button. No, less complication. Figure it out without whatever this fourth dimension is, right?
It's funny because I think everyone always wants to put you in a box. Everyone's trying to figure out, like, what do you think? What side is this person on? If I could touch a button and they'd be called Redskins again, I would hit the button. Now, I would want to do some more due diligence to make sure that there are enough people in the Native American community that are either willing and wanting the name to be back or that are unbothered. If it is an issue, then we could have that conversation. But my reality has always been it's not going back. I don't know who else needs to weigh in on this. I don't know how many times we need to talk about this. I feel like we're blue in the face on this issue. It is what it is. Some guy's yelling at me like, I can't believe you don't want the name to be Redskins. Bro, I've moved on. It's not that I don't want to. This is what being a grown-up's about. Every now and then you lose, and you move on. And I think most people probably have. I lost. I wanted it to be Redskins. The reason it wasn't was mostly, I think, because Dan Snyder was an insufferable human being and people hated his guts. There were other reasons. It's not going back. But here we are, Danny, in July, late July of 2025, still talking about this. Mm-hmm. Do you know how much money I would have lost if you would have said 3 years ago, we're going to be talking about the name, and it's going to be essentially the hottest that it's been as a topic in years in late July of 2025. I say all that to say Josh Harris has spoken on this. Mitch Rales has public comments on this. They've all said the ship has sailed. They've all said they're not going back. Could that change if the president strong arms them or now says, hey, this is the time, let's change it? I guess it could. But until one of them comes out as owners publicly and says, we'd like to change it or that they're willing to change it, they're already on record. They've already spoken and said, Commanders is here to stay. Move on. And so that's exactly what I'm doing. I didn't take these comments initially yesterday as meaningful because I think it's just kind of what Trump does. I think he's just tweeting. He's just saying something that was on his mind. And then we all go crazy reacting to it for an extended period of time. In fact, some of his advisors have said this publicly in books and things that I've read, where the philosophy is throw as much stuff out there as possible. You can't keep up with everything. And then you kind of pick and choose what you end up really making the thing that's going to be worthwhile to keep pushing forward, right? I just think that's what happened yesterday. I think the team, the fan base, you guys, unfortunately, you and I, Danny, we all kind of get caught up in the middle of the storm here, which was... this was just the thing he tweeted
right
about.
Usually it's a matter of policy that we're not talking about on the old radio program.
Exactly.
But this is where my favorite football team is going to play their home games. So all of a sudden, you have to scramble. You know what I mean? Like you simply have to react in some way or have to have an idea about it.
Both sides do this. He just said something to get some high fives and to throw some meat out to his base, basically. Should we prescribe a lot more meaning to it than that? I would say no. But I will say the Eric Flack tweet today is where I have pause, where I go, wait a second. This is worse than I thought.
Right.
If he decides, now I think he's forgotten he tweeted it and he's on to the next thing, but if he decides that he does not want this stadium deal to go through unless they change the name, in the same way, if you remember, the team couldn't get a stadium in D.C. until they changed the name before, if that's annoying, then welcome to my life because I'm stuck in political purgatory and political hell where you're just being used as... you're like kids in a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's like to be a fan of this team, basically. That my name, my stadium, it's all just two sides fighting and I'm just in the middle running back and forth every 4 years, basically. But I kind of dismissed it. I was like, that's just theater. It's just a comment. I'm not going to think too much about it. But then you hear, actually, he could 100% stop this stadium deal from happening.
Right, as any president could.
Oh, boy.
There are means at their disposal to do things.
Yeah, but nobody would have done that yesterday.
Well, yeah, post on the thing. But, I mean, any president could say, that this new building that we want to build, or that people want to build, we're not doing that, and use the Fine Arts Commission or whatever. I mean, the point is, the relationship between the federal city and the federal government is always... there is oversight. There's always something else that can happen.
But Trump was at a press conference with the team with the Commander's helmet and Josh Harris shaking hands 6 weeks ago.
Oh, totally.
After the federal government gave them the land and at no point brought up the name or had any issue. In fact, there was actually a press conference. off, you know, right outside of, I don't know if it was Air Force One or whatever, but you remember this. Mm-hmm. We played the audio where he was asked about the name. This was going back like a month ago. There was no ultimatum. My point is, I don't think he cares that much about the name. I certainly don't think he cares that much about the stadium. But for whatever reason, yesterday at 2 o'clock or whatever it was, it became a very big deal to him. I'm just assuming this is not something that's actually going to be on his radar and that he cares a whole lot about. I think it was just...
I think it's a fair assumption.
He just tweeted, and now it's the biggest deal in the world to everybody that has to live with
it. To us little peons, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, again, the thing that I wonder is, what is the team thinking today? Like, what is Mark Klaus, who came from Campbell's Soup, just to try to get a stadium and a couple of sponsorships?
He wants to schedule a commercial with Donovan McNabb's mom today.
Like, do you think
he just wants to go back to Campbell's Soup?
He
so
misses
bad.
Chicken noodle right now. I mean, what is he supposed to be doing? I mean, it's already like, let's pretend the president never said a word. It's already, you're doing Matrix style dodging and shenanigans and time warping and all sorts of crap just to deal with the city council, right? Just to do that part of it. Just to try to lobby everybody, pressure everybody, get what you want, greasing every wheel. He's already done yeoman's work, and from the team too, all their hired lobbyists and consultants and whoever, to get the land, to get a unanimous 11th hour or midnight hour donating basically the land for free to use for the city government. Really valuable waterfront real estate to allow D.C. to do what they want with it, with the idea that it's going to be a stadium. That was a Hail Mary. Getting the council on board is damn near impossible. Getting everybody to agree to stuff. Then the actual deal itself that they hammered out with the mayor, duly elected, etc. All this stuff is incredibly complicated and why you earn a lot of money. Now you add in this layer, they're probably going, are you bleeping kidding me? We now have to have responses. We now have to share views on this or not, or now we have to grease wheels at a whole other office. I mean, the endless amount of headaches that it's taken to get the thing that everybody wants, I can't imagine it. I mean, it's why, listen, they're billionaires, they'll be fine, but my God, man.
The truth is, we have no idea if Trump has talked to Harris, right?
We don't know.
Owner of the team, president of the United States. We know that they met at a press conference. We know that they were shoulder to shoulder at one point. We don't know if there's been a phone call in the last day or so. But we have an idea of what it might sound like if there was a phone call.
Right. You know, like on Unsolved Mysteries and Robert Stack's going out there going, we're not really sure what happened, but that here's a dramatic reenactment. We did that.
By the way, do you know how many of those people in those dramatic reenactments used to have tipsters call in on them? Have you ever heard about this?
No, what do you mean?
Someone did a documentary on it at one point. So like when there's an actor who's being the guy who abducted the girl for like one of those shows, someone would see that actor out and about and they'd be like, oh my God, I see
him. I see the guy.
And so those actors that would play those parts of the bad guys would so often have like police pull them over, or show up or whatever. They're like,
here's my SAG card. I just did a role in Unsolved.
I played this guy. They think I'm him. It's not him. It's actually me. This is how the phone call would go between Trump and Harris.
Hello, this is Josh Harris. Josh, it's 47. So we're going to talk about it. So many people are talking about the beautiful team name. And you changing it. People are saying, they're saying this, it would be so great for you to do it. So much excitement and very big winning. Well, Mr. President, I can certainly appreciate that some of our fans would. I have to tell you, I thought it was so unfair how they made so much fun of you when you shook Joe Buck's hand. Everyone can see he overextended. It was so far out that it was a no man's land. It was very awkward, and he deserves all the blame. Everyone knows it. Well, thank you for saying that, Mr. President. It was definitely a human moment. But our fans, and why don't you just pay Timmy, the receiver who's done so well there? He caught passes from so many terrible quarterbacks. They were Doo-Doo Brown. Do you need any help with the deal? I'm very good at it. No, sir. We are actually making... Anyway, I got to tell you, this is going to be so great. I've been thinking, and here's what we're going to do about Trump Field. At Trump Tower Stadium. I'm sorry, what did you just... It's going to be so beautiful. We're talking some burgundy, but so much gold here. It will really pop and be so beautiful. Then remember the old drawings and the renderings. They were so bad, but there was one great idea there. We want the moat, okay? We're going to have a moat there and actual alligators in it, and they'll be so strong that no one will jump in. Well, Mr. President, my partners and I are still working with the D.C. Council and the mayor, and we're going to build so well, so strongly. We'll have a big jail for the Cowboys fans. It'll work so well. Sir, I was listening to some sports radio the other day, the failed and weak show. Grant and Dave. Not many people know them, but I do. I know so many things, believe me. But super loser Grant Paulson was talking about the stadium. Yes, actually, Grant has been one of our strongest stadium advocates. So-called Grant Paulson, he told his dumb, stupid, loser co-host, David, or maybe it was Donnie, such a bad show. Terrible. One of them who works on the show, Ryan, said he'd never seen wedding crashes. Can you believe that? But you won't talk about it because you're dishonest. Anyway, here is the deal, okay? Are you ready? Sure thing, Mr. President. So you have to call them Redskins, no problem. We're going to make them Redskins. It'll do so well, believe me. A few other things. In my suite, we're going to need so many Red Baron Circle pizzas. In the fridge, at least 13 bottles of Sunny D. We're also going to have one of those TVs on that looks like a fireplace, but it's just a TV. Have you seen those? This is one of our great American businesses. They make such a great product. It's a video of a fireplace fire. Mr. President, I'm not sure we'll be able to change the name or name the stadium after you. Josh, so many years ago, when I was a fighter pilot, I did so well, believe me. I had such a strong record. I encountered a MiG-28 and went to an elite flight school, and I met a girl with a boy's name. I lost my very good friend, but I kept flying. Sir, isn't that just Top Gun? Is your point that, like, Maverick endured a really hard setback? He kept going because the cause was bigger than just him? No, I'm saying a statue of me flying a fighter plane should go right at the front entrance, next to the other statue of me holding a space laser sword. Okay, well, thank you for calling, Mr. President. I have so many pictures. Believe me, some of the very best artists made them. One at a carnival who makes your head too big in the picture. He does such good work. He drew me flying the DeLorean. That one goes right next to me, stopping the dinosaurs like Peter Quilt did when he was in a different movie about dinosaurs. Hello? Josh? Okay, for the record, I hung up first.
I'm just glad we got a listener.
Somebody.
An extra listener. There you go. That's how the conversation...
That's what we think.
...went.
Our best guess at it.
As far as we know.
It's our best guess.
We're in the process of canceling the Beltway Blitz and blowing it out of the water because there is breaking and developing news, as you just heard from our own Toby Altizer there. Adam Schefter at 4 o'clock on the nose here. Washington wide receiver Terry McLaurin, who is seeking a new contract, did not report to training camp today, according to a source. McLaurin was not present for the Commanders' conditioning test today. It marked an unofficial start of training camp. All other players are present and accounted for, just not McLaurin. Translation, he is holding out.
Here we go.
And the holdout has begun. There was a question about a holdout versus a hold-in. There was hope maybe that they beat the clock and got an extension done, although nothing about the Adam Peters press conference today led me to believe that they were closing in on a deal imminently. He did not speak like someone with any conviction on a deal being a certainty in the offing. And now we know McLaurin is not going to hold in. He's not going to show up to try to avoid the fine and just not partake in activities on the field. He's going all the way through with this thing, man. Our sweet prince, Terry McLaurin, the anti-diva, is going to continue to agitate, try to find some good trouble here to get himself some money. He will not be at training camp.
So I hesitate to try to infer meaning behind certain things, but tell me if you think this is off base. If you hold in, it means it's a matter of hours or you're pretty close. This is what it always has felt like to me. Like, it just means I'm here, we're on the same page, I expect this to get hammered out. I just can't participate because if I get hurt, God forbid, then it all goes up in smoke, right? Whereas if you are not there, not present, Trey Hendrickson, take a picture of the Florida sunset style when training camp starts, you are saying, just so you know, it doesn't mean it won't get done, but just so you know, this ain't close. Just so you know, we are not right around the corner from getting it done. That's how I've always perceived it.
So I don't see it that way. I don't think Micah Parsons is close, as an example. Jerry Jones just did a press conference about Parsons, and he, by the way, nobody, and yeah. I mean nobody, puts their foot in their mouth.
Well, it's delicious. You ever had my foot? It's tasty.
I mean, he can't do a press conference anymore. And I honestly, it's almost uncomfortable to talk about because I don't know if it's an age thing or what, but like he's no longer a sharp press conference doer. He just can't do it anymore.
Right.
To talk for 10 minutes without saying something stupid or putting his foot in his mouth. And I'm trying not to make light of it, but that's just where we are. And so he did it again. But Micah Parsons is at Cowboys camp, and he is going to be there, and he's going through all of the motions. There's nobody suggesting that a deal's close between him and the Cowboys. The way I view it, I'm going to bounce this off of you. I think the hold-in is reserved for situations where there's not really acrimony. Hold-in, not a lot of animus. Hold-out, I don't like you very much right now. I don't want to be around you.
That's a better way to quantify. That's what I was going for.
The closeness of a deal to me is irrelevant, though. Like, Trey Hendrickson is mad at the Bengals. It's not a coincidence. Trey Hendrickson popped off, said a bunch of things about how they're liars, doesn't like them, feels like he's not appreciated. Not there. Terry McLaurin had a press conference at Eastern Motors where he said, I'm not valued. I'm disappointed. He's not happy with this front office or with this team. He's holding out. If you're holding in like Micah Parsons, there's been no Micah Parsons Eastern Motors press conference. He hasn't cut a Trey Hendrickson promo. Mm-hmm. So to me, there's more of an acrimony or an animus thing where it's like, if this is just business between the two sides that's actually going fairly pleasantly, but we can't agree on a number, but it hasn't gotten personal yet, then I hold in. If I hate your guts and I can't see you right now, we're on a break as a couple, because I think right now Terry McLaurin and the Commanders are on a break,
mm-hmm.
I hold out. Trey Hendrickson and the Bengals may or may not get back together, but they ain't sleeping in the same bed right now. He's holding out. In fact, he's posting pictures with the geographic tag of Florida, which was outstanding.
He's very much in Florida
today. But that is the news of the day. Terry McLaurin holding out. I guess it's possible he could show up tomorrow, but don't you agree with what I said last segment? If you're showing up, you show up for the start of this thing right now. It's not like he's just going to stroll in there tomorrow while everyone's on the practice field a day late. I think you determine whether you're holding in, holding out, or just going to practice yesterday, and today is day one of this, not tomorrow, even though there's no practice yet. This means until he gets a deal, he's not showing up, and he's going to incur a $50,000 fine every single day starting today.
That's what you'd think, yeah. I mean, and from, again, from everybody's perspective, I understand it, right? From if you are close, you wouldn't want to start escalating that to me. You said it better than I did. I was trying to quantify it, and you did better than I was able to. But if it feels like if there's no animus, then you don't want to start escalating those fines and the like, and everybody can be on the same page. You just don't happen to run that route, and you know, you go inside and sign when it all gets hammered. When you're not close, now everybody has to escalate. You've got to be willing to accept, you know, $250,000 a week. You know, 5 days not going to practice, 6 days, $300,000. And the team's got to be willing to start doing that because you're basically calling each other's bluff, right? From a team perspective, they have so much leverage here. Every team does. This isn't just a Washington. Every team has an advantage over a player trying to hold out given this CBA and the way it's structured. So you're sitting there going, count up your fines, man. As much as you want to lose, it's on you to lose it. Right? As long as you want to hold out and make it worse for everybody, you're under contract for this year. You are now in violation of that contract in search of a new one. That's not a great methodology for earning your service time and getting yourself to the next deal. So the team can and should do what they're doing as you still try to negotiate in good faith. And the player who thinks you're not close, this is the one chance you've got to try to get more. So I understand it.
For the people who say $50,000 is a huge number, there's no way he's going to let them bleed him out of that much money throughout training camp here, and he's going to deal with that fine. I mean, Terry McLaurin has made $42 million over the last 3 years. That's not even 1%, like $50,000. Now, you add that up enough times, it gets to a few percent. But it's not even 1% of what he's made over the last 3 years, which is not even to say his career earnings. I'm just going over 2022, 2023, 2024. He made $24 million last year. He made $11 million the year before. He made $7.3 million the year before that. So he doesn't notice a $50,000 fine, assuming he's been smart with and done a good job with his money. And let's face it, everything that we know about Terry McLaurin would suggest that this is a guy who's got financial advisors and he's making some really smart grown-up adult decisions, because nobody's more grown-up or smart or more adult, seemingly, than Terry McLaurin. So I don't think the fine thing for a week or two is really that big of a deal. But I've got a lot of questions otherwise about how far apart they are, and frankly, how in the heck did we get here? It just doesn't seem that complicated. The market is pretty much set. This is what a wide receiver who you deem a number one costs, which tells me, Danny, they disagree, the team and the player, on whether or not he's a number one wide receiver. Convince me otherwise. We know what a number one wide receiver costs. We've seen what DK Metcalf got for a team he never bled for or sweat for. We have seen what a younger version, maybe not a great comp, but Ohio State standout as well, Garrett Wilson got in New York. Like, the market is the market. We see where he slots in. It's going to take a little over $30 million AAV. It's going to take X amount of guaranteed money. It's complicated because, unlike at other positions, it's not all elite guys and then a little bit better. It's tiered in a funny way because some of the contracts are out of whack.
Right.
But this should not be that complicated. So I just can't believe that this team decided this is the time with this player that this is when you keep your checkbook in your pocket.
So I'm trying to interpret. I think you make a good case. But let me just put my thinking cap on. Age, 25, 25, 25, 27, 24, 26, 24. What do those sound like? That's the ages of the guys when they sign these extensions that are above him in terms of AAV right now. He's 30. I think that's a huge calculation. You look at the history. There are exceptions. Henry Ellard, or you can go down the list who played here. But there are guys who've been north of 30 who've been very productive that have lived up to the top billing. There aren't that many, though. There's a lot more that have not, that have regressed or gotten worse or gotten hurt or lost steps and have not been the same player.
What was A.J. Brown? 27, 28?
A.J. Brown was 26 at the time of signing.
So he signed an extension, it says, in 2024, and he's 28 now. I'll take your word for it that he was 26. I was thinking he's 27. But yeah, there's a couple of year difference. That is definitely a factor in this.
So I think that's number one. Number two, this is the point I've kept making. And the market is X, and that's totally right. I think that's if you don't have the player yet. Right, in the case of DK Metcalf, and you have to you're wooing a trade and you're paying a tax, or so to speak. The Washington team right now has him under contract for whatever the number is. I think it's 22 and a half or 23. I can't remember which. Oh, about $23 million. According to what I've seen from over the cap and from really smart people, the salary, the franchise tag, the next two seasons for the wide receiver spot is 28 and change. 120% of that is around 33. The idea that they just have to go to what the open market is isn't correct. Now, you would do that because you want to do right by the guy. You would do that because you want goodwill and you want to be seen as, you know, lovey-dovey and everyone singing Kumbaya as we, you know, shout our catchphrases together under Dan Quinn. But you're not under any incentive to go above the market based on what you already have in terms of control over the player and him playing for you. If they would like him to play for them, they have mechanisms to go down that road. So the average of 28 and change and, you know, 33, give or take, is around 30.5. If they're not close to that, I think it's a different conversation. But which is the end.
We have a report suggesting they're not. It's the only report that has any details on money. I don't know if it's right. It's Jeremy Fowler of ESPN saying his understanding is the team's not close to $30 million. Now, I don't know what not close means. That could mean 24, which is not close, which, by the way, is a slap in Terry's face, in my opinion.
I would agree with that.
Low ball. It could be 28. 28 is not nearly as crazy, but it's still, you could convince me that that's not close to 30 in player money.
And so here's my follow-up on that. If then you go, we walk into the negotiation with that amount, then the agent, whose job it is to change the eye line, would go, oh, they started at 30. We're going to ask for 36. Or if they're starting at 25, then we settle on 30. You see what I'm saying? And the team can't budge until they get to the place that they think is far more reasonable. And the agent's job is to bleed them dry, is to get as much as humanly possible for the player. It's why most guys don't do it themselves and have agents do it. So I see the impasse.
So McLaurin turns 30 in basically week two of this football season. A.J. Brown was a month away from turning 27 when he got his extension. So you're talking about 2+ years as an age gap between the two, just to pull up one guy who recently got paid really good money, even though I would say A.J. Brown's a better wide receiver than Terry McLaurin. But I'm having two conversations here, bouncing back and forth between the two.
Mm-hmm.
I can do what you just did and make the perfect case for why Terry McLaurin not getting a long-term deal or an extension done right now makes plenty of fiscal common sense. Absolutely, I can do that. It goes back to the old cousins conversation, though.
Yep.
Like, there were probably people who said, well, you could just tag him a couple of times, keep him around for a couple of years. And it's different because then they went through quarterback hell again for years.
Well, they were trying to go under what the franchise tag was.
Understood. Right. But my point is, there is just generally, with a guy like McLaurin, normally a tax you're willing to pay above the perfect deal for the team, where you overpay or you go a little further than you should, just because he's the guy in the building. Mm-hmm. And they have shown no willingness to do that. And that, to me, is surprising. I'm not saying it's a bad decision. Again, I said months ago, I thought this deal would get done before training camp. I think he'll be a little bit overpaid for a little bit too long. Won't be a great contract, but everyone will be happy and high five and camp will start. The team's not willing to do the thing that is a little bit worse than probably best for them. A McLaurin franchise tag next year would be $30 million, based on his salary this year. So you would be tagging him at $30 million next year anyway. And then it would be 120% of that the next year. So you'd still, if you're doing a two-year game with him, you know, you're doing 2 and 60 whatever at that point, fully guaranteed. And maybe they're going, we have no problem paying him for 2 years before Jaden Daniels gets money. It's year three of the deal that bothers us, or it's the fourth year that he wants that we want nothing to do with, where we'd have to carry over some guarantees.
Yeah, we want him for three. I'm just saying this out loud. We want 3 seasons of Terry McLaurin, including this one upcoming. And after that, we're not sure we want to be in the $30-plus million business of a guy that's going into his age 34 season.
It's funny. I've got tweets coming in, and amazingly, it's kind of like the antithesis of one another on both sides of this thing. I've got people here who are so pro McLaurin and anti-team. Why are we doing this to him? Says Chris. You know, as if Terry's some victim. And then I've got a guy here who says, trade him. Good for them. It's a divisive issue.
Mm-hmm.
But I do wonder what the shot clock is for this organization before people turn on them a little bit and how they're handling the most important, most beloved player on the team. I was just talking to the guys behind the scenes. Toby, who you guys hear on the fan all the time, is working behind the scenes on our show right now, is 25 years old, 26. Terry McLaurin's his favorite player ever for this football team. Probably the best player he's seen during his lifetime as well. There's an entire generation of fans during a really bad era where Terry is their guy. And if you see your team playing hardball with, this is the time they decided to stick the we're very frugal or we're going to only get the right deal for our team flag in the ground. This is the first time they've really been that team publicly. There's going to be people that have a hard time with that. I also wonder the flip side with Terry, who's beloved, who's never done anything the wrong way, who is such a team-first, professional, awesome player. You want your son to be like him. You want your daughter to date him. How long does he get with the fans to hold out, to agitate? Now you've had a press conference at a dealership. Now you're not showing up before they start to turn on him a little bit.
Yeah. And listen, the team doesn't really want to get involved in PR battles, it seems like, in terms of like counter messaging and the like. But you'd have to start wondering at a certain point if everybody's yelling at you, maybe something comes out finally where, yeah, he's being unreasonable. He's asking for this or that, or his agent is behaving in an X amount of way.
Tim Ben Sinnott, fake it, Mariota throws it, caught by Sinnott, touchdown, the first of his NFL career, rookie out of Kansas State.
You don't want to redshirt your second round pick very often, but that's effectively what happened for Ben Sinnott last year with the Washington Commanders. Look at his play time on offense, you know, non-special teams work, it was pretty sparing. Played on 311 snaps, which was 27% of the team's reps, which is more than you may have thought. But a lot of that was in line as a blocker.
Uh-huh.
You look at targets and actual involvement in the passing game, there's not a whole lot on the ledger. 5 targets, 5 catches, 28 yards, averaged about 5.5 yards per catch, and did score that one lone touchdown. Caught up with him at training camp today after what was practice number 2 of camp and asked Ben Sinnott what he thinks about a rookie year where Yeah, he didn't catch a whole lot of passes, but that had a lot to do with his usage.
I think it was a good year, just being able to have a good amount of playing time that first year and be able to just kind of see where you fall and see where the pieces fit with a really competitive tight end room. But I'm just really looking forward to growing and continuing to build that confidence into year two. Being able to have all that data to look at from year one and just make those improvements as they come.
So when you took that data, as you called it, like, what are the things you said, okay, here are a few areas where I really want to get better? Is it physical or
other things? It's physical, it's mental. From a physical aspect, I mean, top of routes and keep my feet on the ground on contact were the two that me and Coach Rye really focused on and what I noticed. And I think from the mental game is just continuing to learn football, knowing the fronts, knowing what coverage is, knowing the adjustments in every play design and just being able to go out there and play fast. And repetition builds that confidence. And I think as I continue to get those reps and through OTAs and through camp, it's just going to continue to stack and you're going to see improvements. So,
is that one of those things where you feel like you probably know a lot of ball and then you get to the NFL and you're like, oh my God, there's so many things I had no idea I didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's always something to learn. This game is so complex and just being able to keep up. And the game changes so much from when Zach even started 13 years ago. So just being able to improvise and adapt, and there's new coverages, there's new fronts, there's different ways these DCs are trying to attack the offense. So being able to just continue to learn, it's going to be a never-ending thing, and I'm up for it, and it's been a blessing to be able to have the guys and the knowledge that I have to pick from. So
we didn't see you get overly involved in the passing game last year, but in the preseason you made some really impressive plays after the catch. And curious, do you feel like you're just an opportunity away from kind of showing what you can do, and that was part of it last year, that you know, in terms of, you know, not having a lot of catches or whatever, that basically that you're in a loaded room with a future Hall of Famer?
Yeah, definitely. Opportunities are everything, especially in this league and what system you're in. So I'm looking forward to this year, hopefully get some more opportunities to show what I can do. And I think a big thing is in that preseason, you're having fun and you're wanting to show what you can do. And I think a big part of my game is after the catch. So it's just having opportunities and being able to do what you need to do with the ball and extend plays for your team. So
lastly, non-football, when you're not training, doing things, what are the things that Ben Sinnott does that kind of makes you feel good?
Yeah, I love to golf. I grew up playing. It's one of my favorite hobbies. I love to play the video game. And just hanging with my wife, watching a show, just relaxing and staying inside in the summer. Try not to get too in the humidity, but
you're breaking your rule today.
Yeah, exactly. It's different. When it's time to work, it's time to work. But being able to just spend time with my wife and get out on the golf course are my two favorite things.
What's the TV show you guys watch?
We're really into Survivor right now. We have watched a couple different seasons now, and we're trying to just continue to get at it. So we love the show. It's something, the twists and turns, and we really like it.
Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thank you.
I love that answer from him when he said, I think a big part of my game is what I do after the catch. It's about having opportunities. Well, he hasn't gotten to show that at all. I go back to the preseason game against the Jets all the time, because that was the one time we ever really saw it.
Yeah, we got one case of that.
He caught a ball in space, and he dragged like three dudes with him, and he broke a couple tackles. And quite literally, in my mind, he has lived off of that play since, where I go, I think he could be a pretty good NFL player. It's that snap, that preseason rep.
Yeah.
Because at the tight end position, they've got a guy in Zach Ertz who's the opposite of that. What he's got when he catches it is what he's going to get. He doesn't make the plays after the catch. If he's healthy, he's going to be the targeted key piece at tight end. But if he's not, Sinnott gets more chances. And I think that the stuff we've been asked to see him do, basically, you either don't notice because he's blocking at the line of scrimmage, or it's fairly uninteresting in the passing game. When he can catch the ball in some space, I think that's where he's got his special ability that made him a second-round pick, and we just didn't see any of it last year.
I wonder why. I wonder why there wasn't more emphasis there or usage there. Or because if it's... The way I think of it is every team, every offensive coordinator, every quarterback, et cetera, you're judged on every single thing that you're doing. And you're basically saying, here's our best chance to matriculate the ball, to score, to move, to keep possession, et cetera. We're going to go with our best options. And way more often, their best options didn't include Ben Sinnott. at some point, I understand not every week. If a rookie tight end was Zach Ertz was healthy, et cetera. But the way it looks to me is John Bates is a better blocker and Zach Ertz is a better receiver. So it doesn't leave much room for that third tight end in the mix. And that's what he was last year, was the third tight end. How much ascension happens this year with both of those guys back? They made it a point of paying pretty good money for John Bates, who's an excellent run blocker. He's basically having a sixth offensive lineman there, and that's kind of the intent. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I'd love to see, but that means probably at the expense of Zach Ertz, and I'm not necessarily willing to do that.
The seventh round pick, running back Jacory Kroski-Merritt, has become a bit of a fan darling already. And we're only two practices in. This was just based on him being chosen at a position where Washington wants a little more juice, a little more burst. Got to catch up with him coming off the practice field today. The roster hopeful talking about his first 2 days of work in the National Football League.
I mean, I feel good. I mean, a lot of stuff I got to work on, and I'm just trying to find new stuff to get better at every day. So, I mean, I'm trusting the process, and it's been going great so far.
How much of that is you deciding, okay, I didn't love what I did there, I didn't do this very well on your own, or a coach saying, hey, we need you to do this?
I mean, it's kind of both. Maybe I made a good cut, but I feel like it could have been better, like on a more of an elite level or something like that. So, I mean, I'm kind of hard on myself with small things like that, just wanting to be the best at what I do. So, yeah.
Do you feel like from a playbook standpoint, when you get thrown out there and you got to run something, like you've already picked everything up and know what it is, or are you still doing a lot of thinking this early in camp?
I mean, you're going to do a little thinking, but I mean, I know it. It's just me just being out there when the heat is really on. I mean, I get used to it, but I definitely been putting time in, and I'm just, it's going to be a process for me to fully get a thousand percent sure. But I mean, it's going great.
What is your strength? Like, what's the thing you never worry about? When I get a chance to show this, everyone's going to know what I'm about.
I mean, I feel like just being explosive. That's one of the things that separates, I think, in my game, and I just love to be explosive. I mean, it looks different. I have this different running style that I like to bring to the table, and I mean, I feel like just being explosive, that made me stand out.
When you say different running style, you mean specifically to just a lot of guys or in this room? And what do you mean by that?
I mean, just not comparing myself to the guys, but I'm just saying me in general. I mean, I feel like I just run in my own unique way. I mean, those guys have their unique ways. That's why they've been in the league for a long time. But, yeah, I just like to have my own running style.
What's something that you feel like between now and the end of camp you hope is where you've made the biggest adjustment or strides?
I would say just being 1,000% focused on, well, 1,000% clean on my details. That's what I want to work on during this camp. And I mean, obviously, the skill and stuff, just getting better at little things, but just being 1,000% on just the small details.
All right, a couple of things for fans just to get to know Jacory Kroski-Merritt, one of the new Commanders. So if you get a day off, no football at all, what are you doing in a perfect world?
I just got me a little puppy, so, I mean, he's very clean. I mean, everywhere I go, he's following me, loving to death. And I like to eat. I like to try new restaurants around D.C. So, I mean, well, Ashburn, so if you got any restaurants, please recommend them to me. And I like to just watch football.
What's the puppy? What kind?
I have a schnauzer, a miniature schnauzer. That's my little baby.
Like real young, couple, like 8 weeks?
He's seven months. He's seven months, okay. Yeah.
But he's still following you everywhere?
He follows me everywhere I go.
That's everywhere funny. I go. And what types of food do you like? What Ashburn places have you been enjoying?
I like Chinese food. I tried this, I think it's JW Fish, yep. Something like that. Kind of remind me of back down south, so that's why I really love that spot. And those are the only ones I kind of tried so far.
What about entertainment-wise? You like movies, shows? What do you like to do?
I would say I like watching YouTubers, influencers on just them vlogging their life. I think that's pretty cool. And I just it's a show called Football Life. It shows
NFL
that
Network.
Yeah, NFL Network. I love that show. Just show how those guys came up, and I find it very unique.
So you're talking about watching football, watching that. You're a student of the game a little bit. Like, you're a football fan.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I just want to be the best at it while it's lasting. This is something I love doing, so I'm going to give it my all.
Who's the best running back of all time?
I'll say Marcus Allen, number 32.
Know him well. Why him?
Because he's different. Okay, it's him and Barry Sanders, 1A, 1B. But I like Marcus Allen. He's tough. It was a grind back in his time, back in the day. And, I mean, he just run different. Don't like to be tackled. I don't like to be tackled. And that's why I love both of them.
Appreciate the time.
Yeah.
Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt. I dug him.
Marcus Allen?
Love that.
How about that from a young person?
Yeah, has never, I don't love to see him play, but you heard him say he's a football life watcher, so he studies the older players, and I don't know, man. I just think it's hilarious. He's got a miniature schnauzer. NFL player, miniature schnauzer? That's a funny tandem to me. Do you know what those look like?
Yeah.
It's like the tiny little, like almost like a Scottish Terrier looking mm-hmm. dog. I was thinking French Bulldog, if you're going to go smaller. A lot of athletes have those, or guys have big dogs. He's like, I got a miniature schnauzer. That's just funny to me.
Yeah. I'm glad you're amused by it. It didn't move me in any direction, but
you're not a dog guy. You wouldn't understand.
Well, I grew up with dogs, but I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe that. I can believe it.
I don't know if I'm screaming, I can't believe it, but it's a pretty funny breed. Like, you give me 10 guesses. What is the NFL player who's single and doesn't have like a significant other have at home? A miniature schnauzer would not have been one of my choices. If you're a dog guy, you would understand.
Okay.
It's just one of those things. You got to be a dog guy.
I get it. I get it, yeah.
But he was cool. Personable guy. I'll be rooting for him.
The only thing I didn't love was I like watching YouTube influencers. And I kind of like a little shake of discomfort
there.
That's
the old man in you there.
Yeah, I didn't love that. But everything else is great.
The Commanders had a busy offseason. They brought in a bevy of veterans to help upgrade the roster. Javon Kinlaw, Von Miller, Jonathan Jones, Will Harris, Dietrich Wise, Eddie Goldman, Jacob Martin, all on the defensive side of the ball. And it was Harris, the safety, formerly of the New Orleans Saints, who I caught up with after practice today to talk about his first workout on the field in camp with his brand new team.
Kind of like back to school day, first day here with the new organization at training camp. How did everything go?
Oh, it went amazing. You know, it's always good to get back on the grass with the guys, get back to playing football. You know what I mean? Had a good break. You know, came in here during OTAs, competed, and excited to get back out here and continue that and lean into that standard that we have here and continue to build that every day.
When you hit the market this offseason, what kind of things were you looking for in a new team, and how did Washington separate themselves?
To be honest, I was attracted here, man, from the beginning, man. I love, like I said, the standard that we have here, the things that we kind of lean into here, the way guys play for each other here, that love in the building, like everything, you know what I mean? It was a perfect fit, and I wish, it would have happened, it would happen soon. You know, this culture that we have here, you can't fake that. You can't duplicate that, you know what I mean? So, I'm blessed, for the opportunity to be here, and I'm excited to get this team, everything I have.
Was that something you noticed from afar, like in the conference? You guys played them, obviously, in New Orleans last year. You know that now from being here, but could you tell just from playing against them?
100%. I mean, that's something, like I said, you can't fake that. So, even on game day, on the field, that's something that you could, that's tangible. You could see it, you could feel it, you could hear it, guys communicating, guys barking left and right, guys playing with passion, guys playing with that dog, and you know what I mean? And so, and most importantly, guys playing for each other, after great plays, after not so great plays. I mean, guys rally around each other, more than I've ever seen, before. So I'm lucky, and I'm very blessed, beyond blessed, to be a part of this.
New Commander safety, Will Harris, here on Grant and Danny. Obviously, the safety position's changed so much over the years that you guys now do a little bit of both. I'm old enough to remember when you were a strong safety or a free safety, right?
No doubt.
But With you and Quan, how do you kind of see the tandem working, and how do you guys play off each other with your skill sets?
Right. I mean, it's it's amazing because, you know, the coaches do a great job of putting us, in good positions. Whatever they need from us, we're down to do. Every guy in this building, in the DB room, I can speak for. Every guy's willing to do the task. Whatever that may be. It's our job to come out here and give it 100% and the work and the grind and the study. And then, we take the guidance from, the coaches and the game plan and run with it. And it's fun, man, being out there with, with the guys. So
you're known as one of the more physical players in the league at your position. In an era where contact is frowned upon in some ways, how do you go about that being your image and also toeing that line?
I think it's all about, technique. It's all about proper technique. If you have your technique in line, you guys stay, especially now more than ever, you guys stay cognizant of that for, everyone else's safety and also my safety, making sure that you're playing with proper technique, keeping your head up, keeping your head out of the tackle. But, at the end of the day, man, we got pads on. This is, this is what we sign up for. It's a physical game. It's a grueling game. And, that's the part I love about it the most. You can't fake that either. So as long as football still got pads, man, you're going to hear them from me. So as long as we got pads on, man, we clacking, man. That's all I know. So I'm excited about that.
Lastly, fans getting to know you a little bit for the first time. I'm going to just go rapid fire with some get to know you questions here for our listeners.
Favorite
food, like, last meal type food.
Ooh wee. I'm gonna have to go a good steak. A good steak, yeah, for sure.
Last show or movie that you binged?
Ooh, Squid Games was crazy. Yeah. That was a crazy one. I got through that one in like a day.
Who's your actor of choice?
Ooh, man. Tom Hardy. I like Tom Hardy.
Have you seen Lawless? I think it was called, where they're like the old bootleggers, these fighting dudes.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen that, but one of my favorite movies, he had a movie where he was playing himself, like he was playing like twin brothers with himself. I forgot what that movie was called, but it was
Michael B. Jordan just did that too.
Yeah, exactly. Sinners. And Sinners was a great movie.
That
too.
Was good.
Watch that. That was an amazing one.
If you could take a skill set from another player in the league or part of their game, what would you take?
Ooh. Man, I would take, Man, I plan to do this. I want to take some of these pass rush moves off some of these guys up here, man. It look cool, man. These dudes, especially, you got all these guys in front of me, man. They're technicians and, in the pass rush. And, I got my stuff. I got my tools, but it would be cool to, be able to get on them bags with them guys and do what they do. So, but definitely gonna be working on that too, just because it's just good, good to train.
Appreciate you. Welcome to DC.
No doubt. I appreciate it.
Put that Will Harris answer about as long as we got these pads on, they're going to be popping. Hang that in the Louvre for me. I loved that. I like his makeup, his personality. I'm excited about what he's going to bring physically to the back end of the defense. My questions are just based on talking to all the Saints reporters we had on. What kind of cover option is he going to be? How will he do in space when that happens? But when you bring him down in the box, I think you're going to feel him.
That's the idea, right? I don't know that you replicate all the playmaking that Jeremy Chinn had without starting to pay a pretty penny for that. They've shown they don't really want to do that at the safety spot, right? Whether it was letting Cam Curl walk or letting Chinn go after successful runs for both of those guys. He's here basically to be a linebacker and a half. Like, he's coming downhill. He's there to hit. If you're an offensive mind, you're going to try to expose him in coverage a little bit, but, it's up to Witt and Quinn and company not to allow that to happen.